Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until 10. It is now the 19th of May. The sunny days are ending slowly but surely, and the rain is coming in bit by bit and for everywhere by the weekend. The land will be happy for it, and you'll also experience petrichor, that phenomenon of pleasant fragrance from the first rain hitting the ground after a long dry spell. So we try to look on the merry side of everything. Tap out your thoughts to us on the WhatsApp 087 032 32 32. And for longer letters, you can also email oliver@rte.ie. Loads to chat about after that weekend. Eurovision feels like a very long time ago now, doesn't it? Austria saved Eurovision at the last minute from the frenetic possibility of Israel hosting next year. It's a very tense finish to the voting. But Israel did win the audience vote by a country mile across Europe, including 10 points from the Irish viewing audience and 12 in the UK. Plenty of GA talking points as well. The fear of Limerick has returned to hurling after the demolition of Cork. Cavan had the weekend win of the weekend, and all the talk is about how Mayo feels, but really it was Cavan's day. And Galway Dublin was a smash hit, with the Dubs doing the most Dub thing of all by winning with the last kick. So well done then. And Crystal Palace, of course, won a fantastic FA Cup final to give the underdogs joy once again everywhere, and blushes for the oil regimes funding football in England. A kick against the establishment is nearly our theme today, because we're actually going to be meeting a fellow called Terry Deary. Do you know him? He's the author of 340 books, 38 million copies sold in 45 languages around the world. They are The Horrible Histories for Children. And the telly series in particular is believed to have shaped a whole generation's understanding of history very brilliantly, because it's education through the medium of comedy, the best kind, with a really subversive resentment for the establishment and its various leaders. There's even a horrible history on Ireland, of course, where Terry Deary has told the kids how the Celts fought naked so you wouldn't know where to look or where to chop. And he covers also even the penal laws. So very serious stuff covered in it the whole way through. The penal laws telling how Protestants banned Catholics in Ireland from voting and also from going to school, which he says so wasn't all bad. Henry VIII said the Irish were savages. He could talk, says Terry. His list of friends and enemies was known as a chopping list. So they're the kind of gags that made the history go down easy. And probably as well, for many British children, I'd say it was the first time they'd heard about such a thing as the Great Irish Famine and Queen Victoria's PR tour of the devastation. That's all covered in Horrible Histories. As I say, the serious stuff is there too. And for many kids here as well, this is the opening sequence of the show that still stirs wonderful memories of children discovering the hilarious horror of history.
Terrible Tudors, gorgeous Georgians, Siamese Tourists, small Victorian, woeful wars, ferocious fights, stingy castles, daring knights, horrors that defy description, cutthroat castle, bull Egyptian, vicious Vikings, cruel crime, punishment from ancient times, Roman rotten, rank and ruthless, cavemen, savage, fierce and toothless, groovy Greeks, rainy sages,
need a myth in middle ages,
gory stories, we do that, and your host a talking rat, the past is no longer a mystery, welcome to
Horrible Histories.
There you go, the kids grew up with the history. Some of those kids would be in their 30s, late 20s and 30s now at this stage. And the Terrible Tudors and Awful Egyptians, it's a live stage show from Horrible Histories. It's coming to Dublin, live at the Olympia Theatre in June. So we'll be chatting to Terry Deary this morning. Sounds like a fascinating man. He's got a totally different view on history than the kind of popular history that's come from Britain, dominated from the vantage point of private schools and pride in the empire and so on. He's from Sunderland. He's a very, very different view. 51551 is the text. Now, it was extraordinary, wasn't it, about that Mexican Navy tall ship in America that crashed into the Brooklyn Bridge in New York. The early speculation we see around the place before the investigation is the engines failed, and basically the current of the river pulled it stern first into the bridge, which killed two sailors on the 160-foot masts where they snapped, and the sailors are harnessed there as part of a ceremonial tradition. Up to 20 people, others are injured as well. This vessel, people might remember it, has been to Dublin on 5 occasions in the past. The most recent was September 2019, and it's an astounding-looking ship. The Cuauhtémoc is what basically is the official name of it from the Mexican Navy. It's a sail training vessel, and it was setting out on basically nearly a year-long tour. It was heading to Iceland next from New York. But of course, it's got a different story attached to it now. And I think that story, given all the more macabre amplification because of the extent of the number of videos, the number of people on the Brooklyn Bridge and beyond capturing the crash, which shared it then straight away. Nobody had a qualm about sharing it, did they? Such is the age of constant stimulation in which we dwell. Also in America, not even Donald Trump, or you could say now even Donald Trump, is uncharacteristically offering sympathy for poor Joe Biden after his cancer diagnosis, which is very serious. He's been hammering Joe Biden almost every day since he returned. And there is indeed a very big book, which I mentioned here on Friday, coming out tomorrow, all about his health from the Democrats' vantage point, blaming the former president for destroying their hopes of holding the White House. And the pendulum of sympathy in the last few hours, overnight, basically, when this emerged, is swinging entirely the other way for the 82-year-old man. He has prostate cancer. It's described as an aggressive form, aggressive in that it has spread to his bones. What does it mean for patients, though? A lot of hope out there these days for a cancer disease that used to kill a lot of men. The survival rate for prostate cancer, once it hasn't spread, that is 99.6% for those in their 60s. Now, Joe Biden's diagnosis is quite serious. It's stage 4. It's the most deadly stage of the illness, according to an article in today's New York Times. It cannot be cured. But the good news, the specialists say on the news sites, is that recent advantages in diagnosing and treating prostate cancer have changed what used to be a really grim picture for men with the advanced stages of the disease. And one doctor has quoted, "Life is now measured in years, not months. And a man like Mr. Biden, who's in his 80s, could hopefully pass away from natural causes and not from this cancer. Such are the treatments now available." And at 82, he is heading towards the average life expectancy. Prostate cancer is easily identified now early, and all of us men are advised to get a blood test every year from the age of 50, especially if it's in the family. You could even go earlier if it's in the family, chat to your GP about it. And there is some research that shows men who lost their hair while they were fairly young, in their 20s or even earlier than that, are at a more elevated risk of prostate cancer, and they should get checked sooner, in their mid-40s at least. The initial test is just a blood test, measures the level of PCA in your blood. That's the prostate-specific antigen. And if those levels are a little bit worryingly high, then there are further tests before there's a diagnosis. I know there's a kind of a don't trouble till trouble troubles you, but really that's kind of nonsense. You have to get these things checked for sure. Back home, of course, more stirring examples of how many things are broken, and the same things you knew were broken before, but are slightly more broken again. The opening of the new, what is it so far, $2.25 billion National Children's Hospital that we know about so far, now unlikely to happen again until next summer, following revelations the construction completion date earmarked for late June has been pushed back until September. It was hoped the first children will be treated here in this amazing new hospital, amazing if it's ever finished, next spring, but that's now not going to be met. It is the 15th time in 4 years that a promised completion date has not been met. And this new timeline is confirmed. It's going to be confirmed by Children's Health Ireland and the board in charge of the hospital at the Public Accounts Committee this week. It's another setback. The last update with the promise of a June timeline for completion emerged only in autumn, just before the general election. Prior to that, the deadline was February, but then it was extended out, and now it's extended again to September. The chief executive of the board, David Gunning, told an Oireachtas Health Committee that's the date was changed 14 times, and he says in the last 12 months alone, BAM has shifted the substantial completion date 4 times, pushing out the completion date by a total of 8 months. That's only from the board's point of view, and of course they've clashed with the developer multiple times in this, and the rows will look like they could go on for years. We just want children to get in and get treated. On the news sites as well, average monthly rent has exceeded €2,000 for the first time. They're climbing now faster than that at any point over the past 20 years. So we've gone beyond the insanity of the Celtic Tiger rents, and this is a new level of insanity. Daft.ie's quarterly rental report, I believe they are always based on new rentals, the start of a lease. Cost of renting has increased another average of 3.4% in the first 3 months of this year. So now the open market nationally, €2,053 compares to a low of 765 in 2011 and is even 50% up since COVID-19 early 2020. There are only 2,300 homes available to rent across the country. And of course, when supply jumped up massively during the lockdowns, rents didn't go down at all. So this idea of extra supply will bring it down doesn't really, it doesn't provide any hope at all. And it's the housing market behaving precisely as policies have designed it to do, you know, keep it profitable for a certain number of companies. And the hope is that they'll carry on building and funding the building. It's not working. It is not working. But look, people had their say in November and we decided to endorse the current housing policies. And the Department of Housing is also saying it's in a different story, but they're saying the extraordinary numbers of commencement orders to build lodged in the last 2 years in response to government measures to accelerate supply. So this is it's a story about the number of new homes commencing so far this year is 8 times lower than the same time in 2024, which is extraordinary. But they're saying there's been a huge acceleration over the longer. They're trying to look at it in a climate way. So if you look at the last few years, you can see the commencement orders have gone up. So that is what they're saying there. And like I said, people have endorsed exactly what's going on. What's happening down in Cork? Well, there are robot trees. Trees disappeared from places randomly in Dorking and so on. Now it's Cork's eco robot trees. Get the axe. People in Cork will remember this. 5 devices. That's a horrible word for a robot tree. They were put up in August 2021. It was a local authority initiative. They said to provide more greening of the city. People said, no, if you just plant more trees, that would be greening. Instead of robot trees, which cost €350,000. It was from a German biotech company. And it came out of the Transport Authority money. Anyway, they said it was the robot trees would filter the air, absorb the toxic pollutants and particulate matter from the air using MOS filters. And they would have sensors and collect air quality data for analysis, which would be great for the city. They have now been taken down only 4 years later. The trees also had 40-inch telescreens, which was disseminating information about the air quality in Cork City. But in recent months, the trees had begun to show signs of wear and tear. And nobody seemed to like them, especially people who do all the research in this area. A researcher at UCC on atmospheric chemistry said it was a costly and ineffectual gimmick. Another professor of chemistry said, if I'd asked about the city trees, I would have said, don't bother. And he said, we better to tackle the root cause of air pollution instead of trying to clean the bits of air around where these trees were located. Also, a report from the data collected from the robot trees were inconclusive. The data was basically no use. If you hadn't seen them, they were big boxes of kind of horizontal slatted wood panels. Looked like kind of an outdoor chat show going on. But they're gone now. You can still sit there on the kind of, they looked nice and, you know, oak stained coloured, like patios in Ireland that then just turn grey very quickly. Failure at every level and they're gone, basically. They're gone. It's very unfortunate. This is a merrier story. OK, well, you need something to cheer yourself up. An endangered green sea turtle thought to have survived a shark attack and a 3,000-mile Atlantic drift landed in Ireland, basically, is going to be flown home next week by Aer Lingus to a place they've discovered that they didn't know these turtles exist, were breeding on before, in West Africa. But this has been nursed back to health by the Dingle Ocean World Aquarium for the past 6 months and had various illnesses, and they had to build up the strength of the turtle in Dingle Ocean World. And these are critically endangered green turtles. There have only been 12 records of green turtles arriving in European waters. One ever survived previously. This is the second. So there's been great work done down in Dingle Ocean World, which I think is just a little place to call in a visit, but they do extraordinary work. And there seems to be some story, which we'll never find out the full extent of what this turtle endured. But the turtle is returning. First of all, going to go to the Canaries and then off to the African coast. Well, the Canaries is in Africa, isn't it, after all? But that's a nice little merry story. They give it a name and everything. Solstice. Very nice name. Very Irish kind of adjacent pagan tribute. Actually, the Canaries is in the news as well. Thousands of people protesting against mass tourism in Spain's Canary Islands. They're basically asking the government there to limit the number of visitors to protect the local residents from housing disasters and also traffic congestion and services just overburdened. Now, they had their demonstrations of what they call mainland Spain, which I'm sure would be quite offensive to some people, chanting about the effects of tourism, particularly on water supplies. I mean, the Canaries are basically in Africa extraordinary numbers. They have a population, the Canary Islands, of 2.2 million. 1 million foreign tourists visit and land on these islands every month. And the record number of tourist arrivals last year, and expecting it to be even beaten this year. The number of hotel beds has tripled since the 1970s, and the loads of infrastructure have been built, but the locals are being priced out and they're heading inland to the... And that they can't afford basically to live there. Traffic doesn't get around the place, and health services are overwhelmed because when you put 1 million tourists in, get burnt and drunk and so on, they are going to be overburdened on the health service. And this kind of, there have been protests against over tourism in other places, particularly related to Spain, Barcelona and Mallorca. And they've been spraying tourists with water pistols, basically, in Barcelona. So very, very angry about those things. And they're going up to Brussels looking for a campaign. And going, there's too many people coming in here. Far too many. Jumping into the story, which is, I think, the most read thing across the British news sites this morning. Gary Lineker is going to apparently announce this morning he's leaving the BBC. Speculation was mounting. Because he was due to present his last Match of the Day. We knew he was leaving Match of the Day next weekend, but he was going to stay on and present the BBC's coverage of things like the FA Cup and the World Cup, which is happening against next year. But he's now pulling out of all BBC future commitments after he shared a social media post about Zionism on his Instagram Reels. It wasn't a video he made, and he claims he didn't spot it because momentarily during that video, there is the illustration of a rat in talking about summing up Zionism, which is historically used as an anti-Semitic insult. In fairness to him, I don't think he legitimately believes that that was a slur. He said he didn't notice it in the video, first of all, should have checked it, should have looked at it, and didn't realise in his ignorance, but was utterly apologetic and seems to be pretty ashamed of sharing the post, which he obviously deleted, said he didn't understand the symbolism. But the Jewish groups in Britain outraged and been calling for the BBC to drop him entirely. He'll save them from the chaos of what to do by leaving. That announcement is expected. It's just another thing that he posted because, of course, he was temporarily suspended. It was only 2 years ago after criticising the British government asylum policy and likening to Germany in the 1930s, ironically. But he went too far online, and you have to be careful what you write, basically, is the rule. You also have to be especially careful what to write, because the semicolon, apparently, it's all over. The worst of times for the bygone punctuation mark. It's a nice use there, because the semicolon, very important to Mr. Dickens. Once a central part of punctuation, the semicolon has almost halved in popularity over the 20 years, according to some online app. So it's only online, I suppose, is where they're measuring it. They can't measure what we handwrite or type out to each other. They were used 1 in 250 words, so a massive decline since the millennium. It's the millennium's fault. Our findings reveal the semicolon's endangered punctuation mark. People don't know how to use it, essentially. Younger people in particular, they're saying, I'd say it's everyone, to be honest. There is a University of Sussex rule from the 90s on how to use a semicolon correctly. The writer wants to join two complete sentences together, but they're kind of too closely related to include the full stop. You use the semicolon. So you don't use and or but or anything. You've got two complete sentences, but you want them to sort of marry together. Stick the semicolon in there, and we can bring it back from endangerment, I suppose. But just don't use the semicolon over and over again in sentences. Observe carefully, the semicolon must be both preceded by a complete sentence and followed by a complete sentence. Do not use the semicolon otherwise. It's been used a lot. Do they count it in its use as a winky face when they put the semicolon final with the end bracket? If you've got to have a wink, that's use of it, isn't it? There are messages coming in for Terry Deary already in our horrible histories, but we're going to give you some music to cheer things up this morning. Ah, yes, this is very nice. 51551 on the text. It's Monday morning. Sure, where else would you expect things? I think you're the